So today we have the third session of our meeting, and I have the pleasure to introduce Yeva Zakir from Millersville University in the US. So you can speak.
Correct.
Yeah.
I have all
20 to 30 minutes.
Thank you so much, and first of all, I'd really like to thank Natalie for inviting me to contribute to this volume, and it's a tremendous, tremendous pleasure and honor for me to be here in the room with distinguished scholars like you, and just enjoying the intellectual exchange and participating in this wonderful event. So thank you so much, and thanks for creating the book. I think we're all very excited that she brought us all together and did all the hard work in getting this done. So my topic today is holistic bias in sociology and contemporary trends. And I'm excited to be part of the controversies part of the book. So I'm looking forward to a conversation about what exactly is controversial about what I'm saying. And maybe I am trying to be controversial, so we'll see how that goes. So in his seminal critique of social sciences, Karl Popper argued that sociological perspectives which root themselves in the ideas of Plato, Hegel, and Marx suffer from the negative influence of historicism and its affiliated idea of holism. And we've been talking about these two concepts for the last 24 hours or so. And today I will apply Popper's critical conceptual tools to discuss the presence of holism in contemporary sociology and argue that the consequences of holism persist in today's social sciences. So I'll start out with kind of outlining the Popper's criticism of historicism and holism, which for most of you is just kind of a review. And then in the second part of the paper, I will go deeper into the different types of sociology where I am seeing holism playing its role. So Popper was deeply concerned that theories and methods of social sciences of his time were detrimental to the pursuit of rational research because they promoted the ultimately what he thought flawed mindsets of historicism and holism. So let's look at each of them separately. So historicism is a conceptual and ideological framework that interprets history as a macro level movement that follows its own logic. It posits that history evolved independently of social actors on the ground, thus rendering individual agency inconsequential. When applied in social sciences, historicist research generates abstract, deliberately vague forecasts about predetermined historical developments. So historicists dedicate themselves to uncovering the inevitable and predetermined rules or forces of history with a capital H. Historicists, social scientists, look at the human actors on the stage of history as mere puppets, as Popper writes about this, irresistibly pulled by historical forces over which they have no control. Historicism teaches social scientists that only those social and political activities that fulfill the impending historical plan are expected to generate any noteworthy results. Yet, historicist social scientists are deeply committed to studying, to the point of glorifying, large-scale social and political changes such as revolutions. Historicist social scientists show a distinct desire to seek out, confirm, and reaffirm indications of impending radical upheavals and socio-political conflict as the ultimate mission of their research. On the one hand, historicists passionately want to see themselves as revolutionaries, while on the other hand, their role is to merely hasten the arrival of the already predetermined historical outcomes. To explain this contradiction, Popper concluded that historicists sought comfort in the world that was continuously changing and this is a quote, by clinging to the notion that change can be foreseen because it is ruled by an unchanging law. Therefore, any society could reveal its essence and potential solely through radical transformation. Historicist social scientists conclude that disruptive transformations are morally superior, while tradition and incremental social political changes are corrupt, ineffective, or counter-historical. So Popper was very concerned that this mindset was making social scientists prone to falling for ideologies promoted by idealistic extremists or dictators if they were convincing enough in presenting themselves as agents of the laws of preordained history's grand scheme. So the next conceptual step is the historicist social sciences' insistence that the only valid history is that of the social wholes. Holism in social sciences is due to the prevalent influence of Plato's holist principle that individuals exist for the sake of the whole and not the whole for the sake of the individual. Holism was then deepened, of course, by Hegelian idea that the unique spirit of the unified social whole could find its ultimate true realization in the powerful state. Holist conception replaced individuals as agents of history with a supreme national or collective spirit and made the will of the state into the driving force of history. This elevation of the political or other social collectivity to the role of a historical agent is really that direct link between historicism and holism. Historicist social scientists use holism when they study social systems as integrated organisms existing independently from individual social actors. They approach the social wholes as self-generating and as able to determine the characteristics and actions of its members. Holists use collective behavior as the sole source of explanation for individuals' actions because they assume from the start that individual choices and decisions are derived from the social whole. But holist social scientists also look at collectives as if they are real entities which must be comprehended intuitively as wholes in order that their place in the historical process be explained. So when sociologists proclaim that a social class behaves in one or another way, this statement is clearly based on the presumption of a unified or generalized behavior of all individuals constituting this class, rather than an empirical observation of actions taken by the members of this collective. Therefore, social sciences are a form of mysticism, as Popper was really concerned about, kind of this indication, because holists assign irrational, quasi-spiritually, their superhuman capabilities to the social wholes. Holist research about social and political collectivities rather made prophecies instead of scientific or rational predictions that he was seeking to see in social sciences. Holist social sciences, argued Popper, were closer to utopianism than rational methodology for studying social processes. So those were the critical points that Popper outlined and worked on. And I, in the chapter that Natalie asked me to write, I took up these conceptual tools and used them to look at the contemporary sociologies to see how holism is behaving today. So the bias of holism in social sciences persists, as I'm making an argument here, and arguably has been deepened since Popper's time. I will identify concrete ways in which the holist bias is currently present in the study of types of social wholes and collectives that were not actually considered at the time of Popper's writing. So I'll start with sociology of gender. The sociological study of gender has become pervasive, even dominant, and it almost exclusively utilizes feminist theoretical principles. These social scientists are laser focused on disconnecting gender identity roles from any possible biological or natural roots. That is, they demand that gender is seen as unnatural and entirely social. Gender has no biological innate foundation. Alarmingly, some of the former feminists now have advanced a gender dogmatist position that one's biological makeup has to be altered to align with one's inner feeling or socially constructed gender identity. And that is a whole different topic that I don't want to go into because personally, I still don't understand where feminists stand in all of this and how their thinking is evolving there. So we'll see where it goes. Feminist social scientists reject analysis of gender through the perspective of individual variation and experience. Rather, it is theorized and studied as a self-generating social whole, as all aspects of an individual's identity, experience, consciousness, life force are determined by socially regulated belonging to the collective of gender. Even if it is essentially a performance, social identity, or a product of gender division of labor. Gender is a social, largely oppressive social whole, and so no knowledge, including the scientific one, could ever be genderless, according to feminist social sciences, because it arose from and reflected imbalances of power between the two genders, which now is a controversial statement. Women's experiences were shaped by gendered labor or gender performance, where feminist sociologists developed the concept of standpoint epistemology and demanded that the scientific community recognize all allegedly universal knowledge as androcentric. They also asserted that the androcentric science had to be systematically and deliberately replaced with research generated by women and about women. So this is holism and historicism because in feminist sociological research, it's founded on a premise which is accepted, not proven, that gender is an all-powerful social whole that perpetuates and reproduces itself through struggle for social power. Feminist social scientists posit that individuals cannot escape the collectivity of gender, the social whole of gender. But it also cannot be really empirically characterized or fully identified because it is actually disconnected from the fact of reality. Gender in the feminist analysis is contextual, changing, performative. Yet it possesses tremendous superpowers that control and even subsume individuals and their personal differences. An individual always knows the world and speaks from the perspective of their social location as determined by their gender according to feminist social sciences. There is no reason to look at social processes through the lens of an individual, because no one is ever able to escape the all-encompassing influence of socially predetermined gender identity. It is not interesting to feminist social scientists to gather individual-based findings because they could possibly reveal significant variations in how, for example, women relate to or make sense of their femininity, or that they may not perennially feel victimized by womanhood, or that the femininity may appear more natural rather than performative. These kinds of explorations are not really acceptable in feminist social sciences because they could actually question the assumption of gender as a controlling social whole and undermine the goal of wholesale replacement of the androcentric social reality. The unfortunate outcome of the holist bias, then, is that although feminist social scientists lionize themselves as liberators from the controlling gender-based oppression, in reality, they are likely to deny or ignore actual individual experiences and agency. Because of their holistic emphasis on the collective over individual, feminist social scientists end up following ideological rather than scientific goals and are vulnerable to becoming an instrument of shifting political winds. The next area that I would like to look at is sociology of race and ethnicity. And for the most part, I have to admit, I'm looking at American social sciences more than maybe the European one, but I think the trends are somewhat similar and they travel. Contemporary social science of race and ethnicity in the United States starts out with an assumption that individuals' self-understanding and actions are determined by socially constructed whole of race slash ethnic group or collective. If any individual, in fact, does not see their life as controlled by their ethnicity, social scientists are actively advocating reintroducing one to their ethnic collective. The goal of rediscovering one's authentic ethnic identity is to ensure that individuals learn to belong to a social whole. Only through group belonging one can find a place in larger society. These identities are omnipotent and essential for individuals' lives to make sense. Otherwise, you're treated as unaware of yourself. And this tendency is very prevalent in sociology of race and gender in the States. Yet similarly to the feminist holists, race and ethnicity scholars tend to be vague in providing empirically measurable parameters of racial and ethnic groupings that they analyze. And because the racial and ethnic social poles are not clearly defined, but rather described as social constructions, holist scholarship does not tend to study the different paths that individuals take within these racial and ethnic collectivities. Instead, they've made a theoretical and methodological commitment to analyze how these vague social poles control and regulate subject selfhood. This research, for example, firmly rejects individualistic explanations of educational outcomes among African American students because, and this would be a direct quote, we cannot reduce their academic problems to individual failings. So instead, all explanations must concentrate on the racial injustice where, again a quote, the entire society is arranged against poor urban students. So, which is a code word, of course, for ethnic differences or racial differences. Holist social scientists center their research around power imbalances and inequality among social wholes. In fact, these sociologists presuppose from the outset that one's ethnic racial identity is worth studying because it creates a pathway through which individuals enter the struggle for social power that characterizes the larger social organism of the American society. This larger whole, according to the race and ethnic scholars, has its own inherent nature and essence. Specifically, it is irreparably unjust, competitive, and flawed. And it facilitates interlocking social ladders and barriers to create a system of oppression. And so particular situations are always reduced to the ones that can be attributed to the personality of the whole of the American society. The implication of this holist analysis is individuals are not able to escape outcomes of predetermined that are predetermined by the nature or essence of the social whole and how it structures the collectivities within it. Consequently, the ability to evolve, to change, and in fact to have history belongs to the system, not individuals as agents of history. So these social scientists presuppose that individuals' lives are ultimately shaped by the features of the social whole they live in. Right? Differences in people's life outcomes are explained due to social DNA or racism's invisible touch that's rather vaguely defined and short on empirical metrics. The holist bias guides social scientists to give a lot of power to the generalized social whole of the entire American society and its nature, instead of identifying concrete, measurable failures of opportunity in relevant social arrangements. As a result, holism produces research that puts less emphasis on evidence, but more on ideological critique of Americanness, as vaguely defined. This leaves such research vulnerable, in my opinion, to criticism that it is based on preconceived conclusions and functions as an ideology, not actually a social sciences research. Another area where I'm seeing these tendencies becoming prevalent is environmental sociology, a very trendy area. This is area of contemporary social sciences has been impacted by holism in the so-called environmental sociology that combines research and activism on climate change. So it attempts to explain why the climate crisis persists, and this is a quote, amid the growth of environmental attention and concern, right? So there's so much concern, everyone is all the time talking about it, yet the crisis continues. To answer this question, environmental sociologists then turn to macro-level analyses of ideologies and social forces that fuel the conflict between capitalism and the need to preserve generally defined environment, whatever that environment means, really. Their method very often is rooted in Frankfurt School's critical theory, of course, focuses on sociopolitical ideologies as expressed in public policy, political decisions, and public discourse. So to explain why current policies and practices do not seem to be able to enforce the requirements of a sustainable environment, these sociologists blame ideologies that, and this is a quote, conceal contradictions through legitimation and or reification of the social order. That's the classical sort of Frankfurt School approach. Environmental sociologists then tend to approach individuals as predetermined again by larger frameworks of thinking and acting set by the power of the social whole. Even if individuals are consciously aware of the frames through which they are forced to operate, they are unable to escape them. These sociologists analyze environmental policies and political decisions as driven by forces that are more powerful than individual agents or groups on their own. Individuals are pawns in the hands of the ruling ideas and interests of the social whole. And environmental sociologists very consistently see the social whole as self-interested and self-perpetuating. Environment-related policies are ultimately made by this larger social whole because it controls the agents who do not speak for themselves, but are forces that constitute the whole. And the last piece of type of sociology I'd like to look into, and it probably is present in Europe as well as much as in the States, is the self-decolonization of sociology. So over the last few years, sociology has developed a sort of self-critique, right, that calls for decolonization of social sciences. To these social scientists who are really passionate about this, sociological knowledge represents very specific perspectives that, and this is a quote, arise from the social formations of the global north because of their historical position in imperialism. So decolonization of sociology as a discipline or methodology argues that social sciences have to correct, and a quote again, the distortions and exclusion produced by empire and global inequality, and again a quote, reshape the discipline in a democratic direction on a world scale. So to achieve these goals, sociologists who are pursuing the decolonization agenda, they should deliberately seek out and elevate ideas and research from the parts of the world that have suffered from this intellectual colonialism. Producers of sociological knowledge cannot escape their historically determined position in the context of past colonization. And so sociology is an intellectual product of individuals who are either colonizers or the colonized. Decolonization project of social sciences requires de-emphasizing the Western and Northern ideas and elevating Eastern and Southern ones, again, very vaguely defined. The call to decolonize sociology is rooted in assumption that social identities regulate individuals' intellectual pursuits, perspectives, research, ideas are either those of the oppressor or of the oppressed. The move to decolonize sociology does not advocate for transcending social political disparities and allowing scholars to generate knowledge that is not predetermined by social holes that they're part of. Instead, decolonizing means reversing the current situation and granting the South and the East, again, very vaguely defined, a privileged position in the knowledge of knowledge hierarchy. The fact of the social whole controlling scholarship will remain in place. And so it would not actually advance scientific knowledge, as Popper would warn us, but rather institute irrational, politically driven controls and regulations over scholarly work. And I think we're seeing that already happening in different fields, including natural sciences. So to conclude, in recent years, some theorists have tried to find sort of a middle ground in the debate between holism and methodological individualism, and I think we spent yesterday talking about that, right, and thinking where would that be, what would that look like. So they argue that there is an opportunity for social scientists to make a choice between the two approaches on the basis of objective rational criteria, such as their usefulness in providing the best explanation, or their pursue explanatory pluralism, where social scientists will alternate between utilizing either holistic or individualistic methodology and epistemology. So I think these theorists are assuming that a relatively equal conversation between methodological individualism and holism is actually possible. But I think such an assumption is naive and not really supported by reality. A careful look at the actual contemporary sociology reveals, or at least in the States, and I would be really happy to hear that that's not true in Europe, but we'll see what you think about it. The contemporary sociology reveals that social sciences are in fact very much tilted towards holism, with less and less room for explanations generated by methodological individualism. Holism's influence extends from ideas about how research should be conducted to who is doing it. Moreover, this is the last page. We're there, almost. Moreover, the theorists who argue about increasing irrelevance of the debate of holism versus methodological individualism insists that, it's a quote, today it is widely held that there is no necessary linkage between being either a methodological individualist or holist and having a certain political orientation. In fact, holist bias in social sciences has a strong tendency to politicize or make ideological the research that it produces. So Popper was concerned that social scientists' fascination with holism was leading them toward making conclusions that are, in fact, antagonistic to individual liberty in the name of a collective view of the world. Holist methodology allowed social scientists to confirm and justify as scientific their own particular political vision. That has to be taken at face value as an ideology. So consequently, difference between holism and methodological individualism is not over. They are disparate. While one sees social reality as self-generating and powerful whole, the other analyzes social reality through the multitude of complex and unique factors. Holist bias in social sciences, and that is my deep concern that I'm sharing with you openly here, silences attempts to focus on how individuals as social actors actively construct and change the social world around them. And so conversations about broader implications of holist social sciences are still warranted, unresolved, and extremely relevant.